Janae and Gola Jr., the podcast.
Blow the whistle.
No. I generally support this song and almost everything about it. But damn, last night I wish they had done anything but. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr., Chinay Agwumike, and Chinay, we got a lot to figure out and unpack right now because they blew too many damn whistles last night. I have no idea who the hell Scottie Pippen is anymore, or who isn't Scottie Pippen anymore. And, oh, by the way, the Brooklyn Nets just hired Steve Nash as their new head basketball coach, all in the last not even 24 hours. So safe to say the NBA bubble and the NBA playoffs continuing to deliver.
So the way I woke up, you know how my TV schedule goes. Like, I don't do back-to-backs on TV just so I can make sure I do everything right for our show here. And so I was like, yes, I get to sleep in this morning, get ready for the show. And I wake up, you know, do my usual stuff, and I look at my phone, and it was Woj bomb, Woj bomb, Woj bomb, because, you know, I'm on the L.A. side, so it was a little earlier for me than it was for you. And I was like, what in the world? I was shocked. This came out of left field. Steve Nash. This is exciting because it's one of those things where it could be really great or could probably not work out. But hey, this is the NBA.
This is the NBA, although this portion of it is very much a mirror of its counterpart in the NFL. I'll explain that in a second, but let's hear from Sean Marks, Brooklyn Nets GM, who joined our own Adrian Wojnarowski, who's going to be on the show here in about a half hour on the Woj Pod, talking about this hire and really, for them, a relationship that goes back and extends really over the last two decades.
Describe the path that led you to hire Steve Nash as your new head coach.
Well, I mean, I guess I would have to look back, you know, 20 years. That's how long our relationship goes back here. And whether that's from, you know, playing against him, Canada versus New Zealand, or playing together with him in Phoenix. And just getting to know him and the character that he is, the person he is, the amazing leader that he is and what he's shown, especially those Phoenix teams that I was on with him, lucky to be a part of with him. And I think that's led to this date where we figured, you know, this is the best person for this job and this team.
By the way, this many days old when I found out Sean Marks was a Kiwi, but that's neither here nor that. Janae, you mentioned high risk, high reward on this hire. What worries you potentially about the marriage of Steve Nash and this very talented, very promising 2020 Brooklyn Nets team?
Well, it's super obvious. There's no coaching experience. While I'll say coaching in the sense that he's coached in the NBA officially for a franchise as a member of a coaching roster, official coaching roster, 1 through 4. But at the same time, when I was just trying to unpack all of these things, I put on Twitter, it was a bold move by Brooklyn, definitely bold, and that's why I say high risk, high reward. But Steve Nash, for sure, is one of the best basketball minds. Star players respect him. He's been their mentor. This could be great, and this is an underrated aspect of why they picked him, in my opinion. This could be great for Kyrie Irving, especially with his passing. He's a tremendous scorer, but if he can facilitate more and make his teammates believe in him, you know, more so, and I know that was a criticism leaving Boston, like how much you make your teammates better or how much you do you. If he can listen to Steve Nash and enhance his game in that way, that's going to be huge, not just for himself and his teammates, but teammates by the name of Kevin Durant. And most importantly, this man, Steve Nash, is an ally. And I know a lot of discussion has been made about, you know, a white man getting a head coaching position when there are a lot of black candidates that are overly qualified to get the nod or even be a part of the interview process. Steve Nash is an ally. He's always been one person that we hear about in the NBA world. Like, he's the guy you want in your locker room, not only as a leader, but just more so as a friend, as a teammate, as someone that you just can relate to. So I think when it comes to basketball first, it's all about relationships when it comes to Brooklyn, because you're going to be managing two major relationships between Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And if these guys both sign off on him and see something in him, we've seen with the work with KD and the Warriors and his time working with, you know, Steve there. It's now been apparent that he's been working with Kyrie too over some time. I actually have a source. I'm not Woj, y'all, but, you know, I'm out here in these streets too. And I have a source that I was talking to, you know, that was within Brooklyn and just sort of digesting this news. And he made a lot of really good points, basically saying that this was all, you know, pretty much relationships in the sense that You know, he's known the GM since college. You know, Sean was at Cal and Steve was at Santa Clara. And there were teammates with the Suns. He worked with KD and the Warriors, and he's worked out with Kyrie through the years. So it's all about relationships. And if that's the number one factor to a hire in this instance in case in Brooklyn, then why not Steve Nash?
The Brooklyn Nets are making moves. Their head coaching hire, Making Moves, is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports. It's Chenin Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests like our own Adrian Wojnarowski that you mentioned join us on the show. Penzo, a performance line. And the relationship portion of it's interesting, Chenin, because we know in the NBA you are tied to your stars, and the influence that they have in buildings is almost unlike any other sport. But this is very similar to what we've seen trend-wise over the last, you know, 5-6 years in the NFL, where if you are a coordinator and a gifted offensive mind who gets along well with the quarterback, you tend to be much more in line for head coaching jobs because of that. People see value in that, and the results have been mixed so far, but we'll see that. But I do want to stick with a point that you made talking about that notion of white privilege with this hire that came up from our very own Stephen A. Smith on First Take earlier today. Here's what Stephen A. had to say after, by the way, Avi heaping a ton of praise on Steve Nash, believes he can be very successful, and did not have a bad word to say about Steve Nash, but more about the situation that you brought up around black coaches and these kind of opportunities.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's no way around this. This is white privilege. This does not happen for a black man. No experience whatsoever on any level as a coach, and you get the Brooklyn Nets job. I know that Kyrie and KD have both signed off on this. I know they both support this move. But I'm thinking about a champion that is Ty Lue, passed up. I'm thinking about a guy who built the foundation for the Golden State Warriors in Mark Jackson, passed up. I'm thinking about the years that Sam Cassell has served as an assistant, first in the nation's capital in D.C., and now with the Los Angeles Clippers, passed up. And it's for a guy. My God, one of the best guys you could possibly meet in your life and may do a fantastic job, but a guy that has no experience whatsoever.
And now, Chenin, we heard that strong words from Stephen A. earlier today, and a lot of mixed, you know, reviews on whether or not people agreed with him. Overall, you said, though, in your opinion and in your view of this, this is not the case in your mind in this situation.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree with Stephen A. the same way that Doris Burke respectfully disagrees with Steve Javy, in the sense that this is not about, I guess, you know, race coming into the play with coaching. This is more so about what you want when you want in a hire. You want the guy that has the talent that the players fit according to their credential. And in this instance, Steve Nash is a Hall of Famer. He has built tremendous relationships with the two main guys. Myself, knowing Kyrie Irving, I know a lot of people have a lot of thoughts about him, but in my interaction since 2010, this man has been extremely highly educated about everything he wants. I know we have that whole flat earth thing, but I think that's more so like that was just more an experiment on his fact. Like, he's trying to see how far people will run with that type of news in the media world.
Listen, everyone's allowed to be wrong about something.
No. I think he was just trying to see if, like, how far will this go, and I think it just backfired against him. But Kyrie is very intentional about everything he does. He educates himself on everything he does. And if he feels like Steve Nash is the guy for them, he's not doing that because he's trying to spite other people in the name of race. He's doing it because that's the same way you'd want to be treated if you're black. You're the person that is the fit that matters most in this instance. So yeah, I totally disagree in the sense that I think the number one thing when it comes to white privilege, it's not about me telling you that you need to understand this. It's more so, does he acknowledge it? And for people that are wondering, does Steve Nash acknowledge his privilege? Look no further than his Twitter avi. Like, it's a George Floyd. So I think that's the underlying message here, that this was the right man for the job, considering the criteria was to have the stars respect someone, grow with someone, and hopefully I think Steve will be that person that can also check them so that they can find success.
There's a lot to unpack with this hire, certainly from that standpoint, but also, as we just brought up, the X's and O's of this with all the pressure that's going to be on Brooklyn next year, with hopefully both of its stars healthy in Kyrie and Kevin Durant. But coming up next, before we get to what might come with the Brooklyn Nets, we got to check in on what happened last night in a couple of pivotal games, because if you can't stand the Heat, you might be the Milwaukee Bucks. That's coming up next. It's Chenin Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Get out the kitchen.
Chenin Angola Jr., the podcast.
an exciting game two in the Heat Buck series, back to back daggers, unlikely heroes, and it all ends exactly the way we'd hope any big time game in the bubble ends, Chinee. By a walk off free throw.
Come on. It was all right.
It just, you know what? We'll get into it. It's Chinee and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr., Chinee Igwumike. Big news out of the NFL, reports that Cam Newton has officially been named the starter for the New England Patriots. None of us really surprised here. Chinee, your side team answers a big question heading into the season. Got to feel pretty good about that.
I feel like everyone sort of saw this coming, especially with Belichick's comments saying that, oh, he's great, he's working so hard. So I think he was priming us for him being named at QB1.
Exactly. So no one's surprised by that there, but now we get to make it official. The Facebook status goes to in a relationship with Cam Newton for the 2020 season and the New England Patriots right now. We got to figure it out because it's complicated with these NBA refs across the board last night. But we got to start with the Heat and the Bucks game. So for anyone that missed it, down the stretch of the Heat-Bucks game last night, and I believe I've got this right, the final 2.6 – oh, no, this is a different game. Sorry. But it felt like the final couple of seconds of this game took damn near forever. Just, I want you to listen, Chinee. You haven't heard these yet. The local radio calls for the end of this game, for the Heat Bucks game. We'll give you the Bucks call and the Heat call on this one back to back, just to show the level of confusion that took place in both of these ones. Let's go and start with the Heat here on the Jimmy Butler jumper that set up that final free throw that ultimately won the game for the Miami Heat.
Dragic into Jimmy Butler. Butler on the left side. Butler baseline. Step back for the win. And he is fouled. He is fouled, Jimmy Butler. And he'll go to the line. Jimmy Butler got fouled. And a chance to win it at the free throw line with no time left on that clock. I have seen everything.
Holy smokes, Mike. This is crazy.
Are you kidding me?
That sound courtesy of 790 The Ticket. Now, here's the Buck sound on the other side, Chinee.
Jimmy Butler goes to work, drives, fades the shot. No good at the buzzer. We have got OT inside the bubble in Orlando. Are they calling a foul? They've called a foul on the shot. They called a foul on a fadeaway. Wesley Matthews with just a little touch. Where's the foul?
That courtesy of WTMJ. Chinee, you can't call those in that situation, in any situation.
That is so funny. Oh my goodness. They called a foul? Like what? It's two different worlds that they're experiencing in the same time. That was a foul. Sorry to break everyone's hearts, but that was a foul. Because I know the ball had released, but if we're going to talk about landing space on one end, you have to talk about landing space on another end. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, he used Jimmy Butler to slow his momentum so that he wouldn't hit him. So he used that hand to slow the momentum. If he didn't use the hand, he would have probably clipped Jimmy Butler or like done something complete. Like it could have been a bad situation. So that's why he sort of guided him so that he can move out of the way. That was a foul.
So,
unfortunately,
Chinee, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. That seemed like a makeup call because before that was a very clear instance of, and this was the disagreement that took place last night between Steve Javy and our own Doris Burke on the call, looking at a three-point attempt where one of the defenders attempted to, for the Miami Heat, close out on a shot and went straight up. Goran Dragic tried to go straight up on that shot. Here was the exchange between Doris and Steve Javy, by the way.
I think it's an excellent call. When Middleton is in his upward shooting motion, in my opinion, and obviously in Mark Davis's opinion too, he comes under him where now Middleton cannot land from his normal position on the floor. In this situation, difficult time to call it, but in my opinion, the right call.
I couldn't disagree with you anymore, Steve.
Doris.
Yes.
Snaps
for Doris on that one. Both are teammates here, but I side with Doris Burke on this one, Chinee, as you do. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that if the right call or no call is made in that instance, then we don't get a call on the shot on Jimmy Butler either, whether it's a foul or not in actuality.
Exactly.
I don't think they're blowing that whistle.
Exactly. Once you set precedent by blowing the whistle with the last two possessions, then you have to do it on both sides. Goran Dragic, he was sort of, maybe kind of in the landing space of Chris Middleton, but he was there first, and he was vertical, and that's what they say. As long as you're vertical, and verticality is a word that they use a lot in the point of emphasis, you should be good. So that was I guess, a makeup call, but it was more so consistency. And you know what's the funniest thing about all of this? This is one thing. Refs watch each other's games and they hear from the grapevine of what's happening, right? The following game between the Rockets and obviously the Thunder, they're like, uh-uh, we're going to let them play. We're going to let them play. We're not going to get caught up like the previous game. So I do think that it was a consistency matter. And so many people say like, oh, if you need to call the fouls late in the game. Like, we hear you. And now they actually do it and they're not keeping the same energy. That whole subset of people that are like, oh, call the fouls, keep it consistent. Like, play through the final buzzer. Now y'all say, let them play. No blood, no Where are you guys standing?
I saw a lot of people say it last night. Letting players call their own fouls down the stretch of games would be a fantastic twist on all of this. That would eliminate a lot of this.
I don't know how that would work. I really don't.
I would love to see it. That's all I can tell you. It would or wouldn't work. But, Chiney, as we look at last night's game outside of the officiating, which unfortunately took over a lot of those final seconds in a way that was a bummer to me for the body of the rest of the game, where the Miami Heat led most of the way. The Milwaukee Bucks were able to make it tight, obviously, towards the end that led to this situation. As we look at Giannis now and this Bucks team in an 0-2 hole, is there still confidence? You and I were both believers that the Bucks would have talent well out in this one, but through two games, Miami looks like the better team.
Yeah, Miami has looked like the better team, and if it weren't for Jimmy Butler, who got lucky towards the end, but then remember, he said it was a low basketball IQ play. I forgot the right verbiage he used. When he was doubled on the sideline, you're told to never throw the ball back at the basket. Like, you'd rather heave it all the way on the other side of the court, have them sort of try to hit a full court, half court shot, then throw it towards the rim of your opponent. So that was a brain fart?
Is that
appropriate? Can we call it? Yeah, that was a brain fart by Jimmy Butler. So if you take that play out, they shouldn't even be in that position. Chris Middleton wouldn't probably be in that position. Jimmy Butler especially. So it was the dominoes of all of those things. You take those dominoes out, the Heat have been playing more intentional. Like, they've been playing like they... And we're talking about a Bucks team that was great at protecting the paint. Number one defense in the NBA. They have shot blockers between Lopez and Antetokounmpo. But the Heat is getting to the rim sort of at... Not like at will, but like with ease. And I do think the Bucks were making strides late. Like, they started looking like a locked-in team. But it was too little, too late. And then out of their hands.
And it was, and this was from a Heat effort, and we know it's the overall Heat team. Jimmy Butler is not a guy, usually, like we saw last game, that 40-point outburst in game one for Jimmy Butler was a bit of an outlier. It was a playoff career high for him, I believe, in that situation. But to get the kind of effort you got from, you mentioned Goran Dragic, Bam Adebayo doing all of the little things.
You saw
right.
my tweet?
It's unbelievable, and understandably so. A big fan of Bam Adebayo and what he does there. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Lots more to dive into that series. You mentioned the other one involved there, your Houston Rockets managing to pull it out against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
For our guest, I feel like he should have his own sound because it's a big deal, right?
This is true. This is true. A very big deal coming up next because we got a newsbreaker hanging out with us here next. Our own Adrian Wojnarowski, the man who broke the Steve Nash news to the Brooklyn Nets, are going to join us on Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Steve Nash is going to be there, too. It's Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And why don't we go there to talk to the man who broke this news, our very own ESPN senior NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski. You can listen to his interview with Brooklyn Nets GM Sean Marks right now, wherever you get your podcast on the Woj Pod. Woj, we appreciate the time today, and as we just mentioned, you got to sit down with Sean Marks and talk about it. What, from his perspective, ultimately led to Steve Nash being the right decision for this job?
Guys, I think for Sean Marks and Josiah, the owner in Brooklyn, Steve Nash, the leader, the program builder, Sean Marks had said to me that he thought Steve Nash was absolutely really one of the most unique team builders he had been around, and he played with him in Phoenix, and I think there's just Nash's story is so interesting. You see in history sometimes that superstar, elite, immortal player struggles with the role of head coach because you're asking players to do things that you could do that they couldn't, and for some it's a source of frustration, and Nash's story is so different. I think he's got a different level of empathy for someone who commands the respect that he will with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. Remember, he didn't become an MVP until his 30s. The Suns gave up on him once, and he went to Dallas and then came back. His story on his way to the Hall of Fame and on the way to two MVPs, it just sort of it's a different journey he's had, and I think ultimately, especially with players like Durant and Irving, the ability to have a coach who will command their respect and who can sit and, you know, be able to teach and have conversations with them on a level, you know, that very few others can. But there's more to coaching than that, and he's got to put a staff together. And there's going to be, you know, there's a learning curve here. It's a significant leap from not coaching at all into that big seat, especially in a job like Brooklyn, where you are expected to compete for a championship right away with KD and Kyrie.
Woj, I really was nostalgic after reading the news because, you know, in another, you know, pre-bubble world, I'd be right behind you. Our offices are right next to each other, and I could probably get like a 30-second, like, oh my gosh, this is happening, heads up. So I miss those moments for sure. But as you mentioned, what does Steve Nash, the player, and his point of view, how can that impact KD and Kyrie on the court? How do you see that point guard vision translating to the play of the Brooklyn Nets stars?
You know, I talked to Bob Myers this afternoon for a piece I'm writing, and one thing, you know, Bob, obviously, in Golden State, was there with KD, and Steve Nash has been there as a consultant. So he has seen Steve on the floor. Steve would kind of come and go there, and he'd see him with KD, with Steph Curry. And, you know, one thing Bob said to me was, you know, there's very few people on this planet who can have a conversation with Steph Curry about his jump shot. Maybe his father, and maybe Steve Nash. And so there's just the respect, certainly, that's there. And listen, the history with Kevin Durant was very important. I think having and as Bob said, listen, it predated Golden State. Now I think they became closer there, and they spent more time, and they worked in the off season. He was a great sounding board, I think, for him during the year. And another thing that he probably shouldn't underestimate is, I think Steve Nash's ability to watch Steve Kerr in Golden State go through what he's going to go through, which is take a head coaching job without any coaching experience, and knowing that he has probably had those conversations with Kerr about how Kerr was approaching it, watched how Kerr approached it, and then also was there to watch how he coached Kevin Durant and how they worked together and what he might do, what he might not do. I think those are all experiences just from that time in Golden State that are relevant to the Nets, but obviously there's a long body of work with Steve Nash. There have been a number of teams, whether it was front office or coaching, who had tried to get Steve Nash into a full-time role like this. He hadn't been ready to do it. He had not wanted, I think, initially to throw himself back into the grind of the league. You know, he put a lot into it, played a long time as a player, and wanted to step back and see what life was like without it. And now he's ready to jump back in and do it with the Nets.
ESPN senior NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski with us here on Chiney and Golic Jr. And Woj, you mentioned all of that experience, so many people, you know, going after him in different roles over the years, but still his first time being a head coach. So how important is Jacques Vaughn in all this, who the Nets now make the highest paid assistant in the league and who a lot thought might be in line to assume that head coaching role after being an assistant there for so long?
Yeah, very important. You know, Sean Marks, as much as Sean Marks wanted to keep Jacques Vaughn and keep him as the lead assistant, you know, he said Steve Nash really wanted Jacques Vaughn here and wants to be able to lean on him. You know, Jacques did a very good job in the restart in Orlando. Very different team, a little bit more of a, like, getting a group to maybe overachieve a little bit. That's not what the Nets are going to be when they get everybody back. But, you know, had, you know, been taken over for Kenny Atkinson back in February, you know, coached a couple weeks before the shutdown and then coached down here. So I think keeping that in place and having Jacques Vaughn, who had been a head coach earlier in his career in Orlando, and I think had a very good chance to, if they couldn't have gotten Steve Nash here, I think Jacques Vaughn had a very good chance to keep that job. But Sean Marks told me on the podcast that he got a call from Steve Nash, you know, a while back when the job, you know, once the job had become open, And then talks got more serious here in the last few weeks, and they got a deal done on what I'm told is a four-year contract.
Incredible stuff and an incredible interview you mentioned with Sean Marks that everyone can hear on the Woj Pod wherever they get their podcast. Woj, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Woj.
Guys, appreciate you. Talk to you soon.
Adrian Wojnarowski, our senior NBA insider here at ESPN. Chenane Golic Jr. reminding you the NBA playoffs are on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight as Kawhi and the Clippers battle the Nuggets, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN
app.
Wait,
is that game today?
Oh,
I
yeah.
I didn't know.
Oh, we don't have 2 days off?
We don't have 2 days off.
Damn. Well, no days off for action yesterday either. We talked earlier about the Heat and the Bucks and the dramatic finish there. But coming up next, we'll get to the matchup that was near and dear to your heart, the Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder, and how it reminded us of maybe the most misunderstood superstar in NBA history.
Yes.
We'll get to that next. It's Chenane Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chenane Golic Jr., the podcast.
Shout out to Cliff, who's playing highest in the room. This is for H-Town, Houston, Travis Scott. I see you.
Travis Scott, who's like got the McDonald's money out here now. He's been selling shoes for a while. That dude is everywhere making all sorts of money. So
he's getting all the bags.
Nothing but respect for Travis Scott around here. We got to get him on the show, guys. That's the next
one. Yeah, he's coming up soon, right?
Just got to start doing the Stu Gotts here and just whoever. Yeah, Travis Scott coming up on the show at some point soon. All right, maybe not yet. Chenane Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. and Chenae Igwumike. And Chenae, we went into yesterday, a lot of anxiety over on your end. H-Town going into Game 7 against Oklahoma City, and they pulled it off somehow. It was an ugly end to that game as well. The officials poked their nose in there. James Harden really lacking in offensive output yet again. Was the most surprising outcome of that game possible that the Rockets would win because of a defensive play made by James Harden?
No, it's not. It's that the Thunder almost won with the offensive play of Lu Dort. Spin that at you. But for the mainstream, because we are a show here that tries to unpack and unpack and get the layers to what's under. Is it a bulb?
It's
an onion.
It's an onion. I don't know what's inside it, but there are layers to an onion.
I think there's a bulb. We're trying to get to the bulb, and the bulb on the surface level, it's like, oh my gosh, James Harden played defense and got a block, and not only did that, did a jumping jack to not make sure that, you know, he doesn't get tagged out so that they get the ball back. Like, that is on the surface. On the inside, Lu Dort with the game of his life, literally the game of his life. The entire series, they were daring this young man to shoot, and guess what? He hit and hit and hit again. When you have scouting reports that say, we're going to guard everyone except him, that you're basically betting on him to be the reason why you guys win or lose. And sometimes that player can be the best player for either team. I said this yesterday. Who did it apply to? I forgot. Oh, Russell Westbrook. I said Russell Westbrook can sometimes be the best player for either team. If he plays really well, he's the best player for your team. If he doesn't, like, sometimes it helps get you extra possessions, and he's the best player for the other team. Lu Dort was in that similar conundrum this entire season, series, rather, and now, like, the Rockets, he held, you know, he had the primary defensive responsibility of guarding James Harden. Held him to four field goal possessions. Four field goals for James Harden. Impressive, but yeah, everyone's going to look at that last play and say, James Harden saves the day, and he really did. I'm glad that he went all out on that possession. Now, we have a whole segment about this. Keep that same energy defensively moving forward. That's what we want. On the block, you hold it down, you're strong, you're built, you know, you're built to withstand, you know, bigs and even like small, you know, big guards, big posts. You can hold it down there. Now, everywhere else, we want that same energy. Honestly, I was prepared for a loss. I was like, something's going to happen. I was preparing myself for a loss, and I was surprised we won. But I'm glad because I think this is what everyone wants. They want the Rockets and the Lakers in the next round, and we got it.
We do. We made it to that. Obviously, that's a matchup a lot of people had their eye on in this one. You mentioned Lu Dort. Shout out to Lu Dort for giving the internet every possible pun to work with right there. Firing off, they came up just Dort last night in that game. That's the Dort and Long of it. It's
that,
all lined
that was
up.
A very strong tweet. Very underrated. I'm surprised the population didn't see it, but I bet you everyone was tweeting that.
Exactly. We were all getting our Dort puns off last night, but what flew under the radar in all of that was a sequence of hilarious flops at the end of that game that was so embarrassing for everybody involved. I hope they replay it again and again and again, but also a heads-up play. You talked about Russell Westbrook and his ability to at times be the best player on either team. in this particular situation, he has at one point been the best player on both of these teams. And last night that played off big time. The last impounds play from the Oklahoma City Thunder, Russell Westbrook broke that thing up immediately, kind of like he had seen it before. He was Russ talking about that last play after the game.
Russ, on the very last inbounds play, it looked like you jumped out on Gallo to help force that turnover. What were you expecting on that play? And is that something that Billy had run when you had played for him?
Yeah, I kind of know a little bit. And I just wanted to mix it up because I knew it was out of timeouts, and I knew where the ball was going. So I was trying to muck it up. There wasn't enough time to be able to make one more catch.
Now, today we see this across the world of sports where players leave and go somewhere else, and we always talk about, well, do you need to change up your calls against someone like this? This one was so recent. How are you not, if you are, in this case, Billy Donovan, looking at this situation and saying, man, we might want to run something that maybe one of the best players on the other team didn't see a million times over with us?
No, you don't do that. You do what got you there, and you stay consistent, and you don't change yourself even though you have someone that knows the franchise better than anyone else on the other side. Like, maybe you can do something out of character, but you wouldn't feel good doing that. I just thought it was interesting because, you know, in contrast to the previous game, you know, with the Bucks and the Heat, now we're seeing a situation where the game is played out. And it was funny because there were bodies flying everywhere. I don't know if it was flops, people were diving for the balls. That's what I love about playoff basketball, because everyone was just like risking it all for that final possession. I think Steven Adams hit the floor, but more, not even like Russell Westbrook sort of, you know, I guess you can say trying to intercept that play. The bigger issue here was that Steven Adams was a foot off the block with PJ Tucker fronting him with a direct line at the rim. Was it Shea who took it out? Shea Gilgeous-Alexander?
Yep.
I can't remember.
Yep.
And I feel like I sort of saw from the angle, he's like, I really think I can make this pass, but the play tells me otherwise. And it was a conflict of emotions. It was sort of like, I'm looking there, like, but should I be looking somewhere else to like not be the person that did the wrong thing on the game plan? But it was one of those things, like, just throw the lob. It probably was the best look you could have got, and it didn't happen.
And it seemed like it was on both attempts at the inbounds play, because remember there was all that discrepancy about was a foul call, the timeout, all these different things. The only person more frustrated than you was Channing Frye in that situation, who was watching at home breaking down that last inbounds play. But we might be able to add Chris Paul to that list as well, because we mentioned officiating played a role in the end of this game too. I'm always relieved when the athletes involved are as frustrated with that as we are. Here was Chris Paul, Thunder guard, after the game, talking about the officiating.
It's crazy. This has been going on in the bubble, like the replays. They show the replays sometimes so that, obviously, it's an advantage if you get to see the replay and then you challenge. So, like myself and a lot of good, I dropped down to tie my shoe up to hopefully see if we see the replay. Scott Foster walked over to me and told me, Chris, you ain't got to do that. I got him sweeping up the floor. Okay, cool. So I start tying my shoe back up, and he still called the leg game. That shit don't make no sense. But I don't know. That's crazy. He just, I don't know. We could have won the game, but that situation, league no. Like, yeah, they're going to find me. I said his name. Yeah, we already know the history. It's all bad.
They go find me. I said his name. He does not care. He does not care one bit. And that's what you call a pump fake. Scott Foster hit him with a pump fake. That's not cool. But the thing is Scott Foster sort of knew Chris Paul's game before Chris Paul. Because in the sense that, like, oh, I'm going to tie my shoe just consequentially. Like, you're going to have to make sure you respect me to tie my shoe. He knew he was playing the game, and then he pump faked him. That I'd be mad too.
He mentioned that history there. Harden and the Houston Rockets had lost 7 consecutive playoff games ref by Foster. For Chris Paul, that number was 8 and now goes to 9. So nobody was happy about the situation involved in that. But coming up next, as we look towards the NFL, we mentioned Cam Newton's the starter. Big news out of New England. But we had a huge signing the other day that got some love in Tampa Bay. I'll tell you why there's a signing clear across the country that might mean a hell of a lot more next on Chenangle Jr.